International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
Hello, and welcome, or welcome back, to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Anum 5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 44. The subject for this installment is The Worst Products of the Experts and Professionals. Episode 44 has a superb lineup of listener feedback. This show we'll hear from Stupid Fool, Dickie the Stealth Geek of the Stealth Geek Podcast, James, Mark Kinney of All Games Considered, and Kurt the Camera Guy from the Wandering Geek Podcast. Top of the show, we'll have extra special thanks, extra special welcomes, a congratulation, all kinds of stuff. But it follows after this. If you settle back, I'll be right back.
Stand by to hear the story of a man with a foul habit. We give you
Confessions of a Secret Cinepod Drinker. Ned Seagum. Coxswain, my melody. I had a tough life. Never had a father. Mother got me on the National Health. She had an obliging doctor, you know. As a child, I was very delicate. One blow from a steamroller would upset me for days. In the years Scrimson, Scanson, and Two, I fell a victim to drinking Cinepod tea. In a basement of a club at East Acton, I obtained my supplies of the dreaded pods.
Here we go, episode 44. I gotta tell you, this has been a real tough one to put together. This has been a real tough one to get online. And I won't kid you, I beat myself up today. I beat the crap out of myself today. Didn't intend to, but it was just too hot out. And I did yard work anyway. Had to mow that lawn. Actually, I had to weed whack the whole damn lawn, front and back, before I could even mow it. Otherwise, it just never would have happened. How fascinating, Annam. So glad to hear it. Oh, what am I saying? I'm just saying that I'm tired. And I think I hurt myself. But, yeah, I think I pushed it a little bit too hard today. So that's why the mic got turned on, and that's kind of why this is being recorded at 4:15 in the morning. I don't know why I said today. What I really should have said was yesterday. But here we go. It's episode 44. Hi, everybody. I don't want to waste your time with all that trivial stuff. No, I don't want to waste your time. And I'm not going to pretend. No pretending here. I'm very happy and I'm very excited and I'm fixated on one thing right about now. And that is post-Gen Con. Gen Con, the best 4 days in gaming.
Anum, IDDFOS is not a gaming podcast.
Well, no. No, it isn't. International Detective Dragons from Outer Space can't be a gaming podcast. I have very limited knowledge on a very limited scale. And I have a minuscule level of recent experience when it comes to tabletop games. I don't have that kind of expertise, so why bring up Gen Con? Well, folks, the people on other podcasts, the podcasts that I like listening to best, do. That may not have been a genuine English sentence just now, but it was a complete thought, I think. So, the big news, Gen Con, Indy 2007. For the wide, wide world who aren't in tune with these things, well, if they've heard about it at all, then maybe they know that it's a convention of gamers. For the smaller population of geeks and gamers, they know full well that it's, well, one of the coolest conventions to attend in the whole multiverse of in-person, face-to-face, gather-round gameplay activities. And within that group, the attendees, the lucky, lucky attendees, aside from the opportunity to see new products or upcoming products from major and small independent publishers, of games. They also got to play like crazy all day and all night if they wanted to. Those that were interested, they also got the official word from Wizards of the Coast that D&D version 4.0 will be out and on sale May, June, and July of next year. We all found out about that. Well, I found out about it by watching the YouTube videos. And that D&D is also, with that release, going to have in tandem a tarted up digital tool suite for the lazy stay-at-homes like me. But aside from that, also at Gen Con 2007, there were costumes, costume contests, panel discussions, seminars, performances, readings, boffer sword fights, and the true dungeon, and stormtroopers, and Jack Sparrow impersonators, and giant dice for the kids to roll around, and Paul Tevis being roasted, and the Ennie Awards. But what am I focused on? What is Anim 5 focused on? What, from that grand gathering of thousands of people over 4 days, am I narrowing in on as the most important part of the con? Two little cardboard cutouts of myself. My priorities? Yeah, I did it. I printed them out. I glued them down. Cut out life-sized corrugated pictures of my butt-ugly toad mug, and I sent them off in the hope that I could be at Gen Con, at least in a mute and two-dimensional form. Is this narcissism? I don't think so. To quote the Bard, I never looked in a glass for love of anything I saw there. And in fact, I did not use Photoshop to put back hair on my head, or any such nonsense as that. No, I just wanted to be there in a little more than spirit, and maybe add a few laughs. Now, I'd like you to do me a favor, please, and this is especially if you have sought out and found this podcast by seeing either one of those cutouts at Gen Con. If you are a new listener who has found this show because maybe you saw one of those cutouts and you Googled Anim 5, or you were told about it if you asked, and this is really doing yourself a favor. What I'd like you to do is, at your next opportunity, if not now, then your next opportunity, go to your web browser of choice and bookmark the following sites. Please go to wanderinggeek.podbean.com and go to harpingmonkey.com. Those are the sites I'd like you to bookmark, and I'd like you to read through them and subscribe to the RSS feeds that you'll find there, because those are the websites of Kurt the Camera Guy and Mick Bradley. And you would not have seen those silly cutouts of me, or the single one, whichever one you saw. And as a result, if that was what led you to this podcast, you would not have found this audio if those two gentlemen hadn't brought them to Gen Con in the first place. Kurt the Camera Guy is the host and creator of the Wandering Geek podcast. Mick Bradley is the host and proprietor of the House of the Harping Monkey that puts out all kinds of quality audio, the Roll Monkeys, the Round Table, Misfit Brew. They're all worth your time. Please go to those two sites. They're quality audio sources, and it's only fair dues for two of the coolest guys on the planet. Now, if any of this is really confusing to you, if you're just wondering, cutouts, what are you talking about? Go to the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space homepage and check out the links to the pictures that Kurt and Mick made available to all of us. Pictures of the fun and goofy places and things that they set up and placed my cutout into. It's just a cutout picture of me with my arms folded. It's not a full standing giant cutout of me full body. No, it's just from folded arms up. Because a full giant cut, that just, a great big giant thing like that, a full stand-up, would have just been too much of a pain in the butt to carry around, and that's just not fair. But I mean, as a matter of fact, you can see the fold line. I when I mailed it to those guys, I folded it in half because it was just too damn big. Where did I start here? Oh, yes, the images. Check those images out. And look at... look at some of the favorites. There are favorite shots also that Mick Bradley included. And there are other podcasters and people of note, as you check those pictures out, that the cutout had the honor of being with. Folks from All Games Considered, folks from The Game Master Show, The Gamer Traveler, Jerry Grayson himself, creator of God Send Agenda, the Roll Monkeys, be good to yourself. Go hog wild. Find those links, too. Listen to those people. It won't be difficult. They're all going to be in the Goodikatingadongatongs for this episode anyway. So get their stuff and listen or read. It's healthy and costs not a dime to at least check it out. You'll be glad you did. Magnificent fun. Grand memories for me and greatest thanks to Kurt and Mick. I've also been informed, as you'll find out later in one of the emails, that one of the cutouts at least is going to be finding its way to the table when next the Roll Monkeys meet to play whichever game they're going to play next. And I just think that's fantastic. Mick also let me know in a subsequent email. And I just... I don't even know what to think about that. I suppose I'll comment on it later on when I read the letter. But, all right, just infinite thanks to Kurt and Mick, and I've experienced my geek out over a plan that was carried out with great skill and aplomb by the aforementioned heroes. So I've waxed long enough on that topic, but I've got to move on now. It's just too cool, but I've got to move on now for the moment at least. More important news came to my attention. I was checking out my Gmail account, because I can be reached there too, and I noticed that the Norwegian Viking, Mr. T, he might be nearby for a quick instant message, and so we connected for a quick exchange, and guess what I found out? Your attention, please. Congratulations to the Norwegian Viking and his fiancée for getting engaged. We truly wish you both the best of days. Well done.
Thank you.
Yep. Mr. T, aside from starting his first semester at one of the most prestigious film schools you can get into in Europe, is also going to get married. This seems to be a good year for it. Excellent. Finest joy to you both, and a round of cheerful applause. I don't have the cheerful applause button ready here. Well, that's stinky. Maybe I can add it in later. At any rate, super. Excellent. What's next up? Oh, something that's not so excellent. Not so good. The forums seem to be down at Gamer the Podcasting, struck down by a glut of spammers, which sucks. I know that I'm anxiously awaiting another episode of Gamer the Podcasting. I hope you folks are okay. Is everything all right? Caroline? Sasha? Jeff? Miss Emily? I do hope you're all doing well. I hope that nothing is amiss. What I hope actually is that you're ultra busy, because that's a good thing. Ultra busy is good. I hope nothing's wrong. Maybe I should just email and ask, but I don't want to turn into a little pest. Come back soon. Do another show. We miss you. And I hope those forums are back up soon, too. Okay, let's see. What's next? Next up is World of Warcraft. Do you play World of Warcraft? Are you a WoW player? Are you Alliance? Are you Horde? I'm Alliance. I think you'll find... Actually, I know you'll find, in the Goodikatingatongatongs, for this episode, a picture of a little walking dwarf. That's my character. I took video of it, and I made a GIF, an animated GIF out of it, in order to draw attention to a link to a new podcast, a new World of Warcraft podcast, that you may want to give a listen to. It is called For the Horde Radio. FTH Radio. Give it a listen. There's only two episodes out, but they're both very entertaining. They're very new. And you may recognize the voice, or you may not, of who all actually is podcasting that show. I'm not going to say anything further. We'll probably revisit that maybe in the next episode. But in the meantime, check it out. I think you'll like it. And listen for the promo for that show somewhere in this episode. Okay. Next up, let's move along. What next? Jim? Jim from Buffalo, are you listening? If he's not, somebody tell him that he has been spoken about again on IDDFOS. Very simply put, happy birthday. But it was, I know, it was weeks and weeks ago. It was weeks ago. Like I said in the last show, I'm woefully behind in catching up with blogs and forums, but God, why is it I have to go to the Dragon's Landing forums to find out that it was your birthday? Send in a note here once in a while. Say hi. But happy birthday, Jim from Buffalo. Two more things. Okay, yep, two more things, I promise, and then we'll get on with the core of the show. The Encaffeinated One, the producer and host of that podcast that I'm so jealous of, The Weird Show, you heard the promo for it right at the very top. You may have noticed that he has been on a kind of a summer hiatus, a well-earned rest, if you ask me. He puts out a splendid podcast. He will be coming back full strength. You know what? I'm wrong. He actually has already put out his first second season show. He's not coming back in the fall. He's back already. So go ahead and try that one. Grab that one. Now might be a good time to catch up on his archived episodes. He's just kind of, he's got the kind of a viewpoint that listeners of IDDFOS would really appreciate and enjoy thoroughly. And he's got a very easy voice to listen to. I'm just jealous as hell of that radio voice he's got. But it's entertaining. It's very thought-provoking. And he also is very well worth your time. The Weird Show. It isn't the Weekly World News. It isn't the National Enquirer. He gets much of his material for pondering and talking about from The New Scientist and other topical and up-to-the-minute innovative sources in tech and biology and odd events. Just give it a try. It's very cool stuff. And you will also find that link in this episode's Gurikatingatongatungs, as well as the permanent links down the right-hand side of the IDDFOS homepage. And finally, what have we finally, before we get into the show, well, I don't want to say show proper. All the show is proper. Very, very proper. But this last thing, and it is from STPD Fool. You may remember, if you heard Skype Chat 5, we had an email from the listener and new FrapperMap member I referred to as STPD, and I asked what he'd like to be called. Well, he responded, and he had this to say in a quick note. Hey there. Update on the name. I'd prefer if you used STPD Fool, but you can pronounce it Stupid Fool, or SF for short. I've found that some people get antsy calling people a stupid fool. I've been using that as a handle now for over 10 years, and it's kind of grown on me. Well, okay then. Stupid Fool, as you wish. Of course, now I can't refer to you as Stupid Fool without feeling antsy unless I keep this bit of wisdom from Shakespeare in mind. This fellow is wise enough to play the fool. And to do that well craves a kind of wit. He must observe their mood, on whom he jests, the quality of persons, and the time, and like the haggard, check at every feather that comes before his eye. This is a practice as full of labor as a wise man's art. For folly that he wisely shows is fit. But wise men, folly fallen, quite taint their wit. That from Viola from Twelfth Night. How's that for pretentiousness? God bless your grace with health and happy days. Oh, let's get moving with this shebang. It's long past time for a quick break, and then on to the topics, well, the topic at hand, and that is crap from on high, the worst products of the experts and professionals. We'll hear first from Stupid Fool right after this. Back in a bit.
Den of sin. This particular night, I was to get my supply from an unknown stranger.
That was me, Count Fred Moriarty, international centipod ace and head of the secret centipod ring. Sigurd was to recognize me by a red carnation pinned to the tail of my shirt.
So that I would not be recognized, I took off my boots. Waitress! Over
this? Yes?
Has an unknown stranger been looking for me?
No.
Thanks.
What?
The man was late.
At that very moment, I arrived in the room.
Woo! Here! Hey! Over here, man! All right, over here! I'm going to the sack with the glasses! Woo! The sack with the glasses, please!
He tried to attract my attention.
In a huge collection of World of Warcraft podcasts, a new voice speaks for the Horde. The Alliance sucks. We're not going to talk about stats or statistics. We're going to talk about things that really matter. And this Night Elf runs right in to the Horde outpost.
I could have laughed. Oh, okay, I did laugh, I'll admit it.
Tell me their names, their guilds, and their servers, and especially what they did.
I was going to say call in, right, like you, this is a podcast, you're going to call in.
Your opinion matters. I want to hear it.
I have never seen an Alliance raid on Thunder Bluff, and I guarantee you it's the elevators. Really fun if they ever tried it, because you'd just love to see them fall off the damn thing.
I should probably say something nice about the Alliance. Their heads look good mounted on a wall, because that's what they deserve. They deserve a good ass kicking. What else was I going to say? Available for download at www.forthehorderadio.com. Give the Baron's chat a rest.
And the first listener feedback received on this topic for episode 44 arrived from Stupid Fool. I think you'll find that his handle is a misnomer, but you'll have to listen for yourself and judge for yourself. Let's see, what's the subject line?
Episode 44, The Prevalence of Crud.
And Stupid Fool writes,
what made me interested in this topic is that it echoes Sturgeon's Law. 90% of everything is crud. My view? The real trick is finding your own 10%. I find that it puts everything in perspective whenever I get too steamed up by getting conned by the big producers. But I've been slammed so many times that it took a while to write about the top three. But here are the ones that always come to mind, one with movies, one with music, and one with books. 1. The new Star Wars films. I watched Phantom Menace in the theater, waited for Attack of the Clones to come out on video, and walked out on the third half an hour into Phantom Menace. I'm a special effects geek, and even the special effects didn't make me like these movies. In my opinion, the only reason those movies got made was because of the words Star Wars and George Lucas. If somebody in Hollywood had pitched them, they would have been laughed out of the room. 2. For music, the list explodes, but I'll have to settle on the Bee Gees, and, well, disco as a whole. Even though I was born during the height of the disco craze and didn't hear it firsthand, the fact is that it had a horrible effect on music for years to come. 3. I'm much more particular about books, but one of the things that bothers me is that the book industry has been pushing multi-volume epic fantasies even more since Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter became popular. I don't necessarily want epic, multi-book, multi-volume books being pushed at me from the book publishers. Sometimes I just want something I can settle down in and read. Also, just want to thank you for producing a wonderful podcast. Stupid Fool.
Well, thank you very much, both for the kind words at the end and the email as a whole. Thank you very much for writing in. You know what? As far as multi-volume epics go, it's almost become a joke that you can make you could make dwellings for the homeless if you would just get together all of the Wheel of Time paperbacks that have been put out since the first one. It just seems like this is the epic fantasy multi-volume set that will not ever end. I didn't think it was possible to actually copyright a title. As we were researching copyright when first trying to publish Hosting the Casimir, Mrs. Anum 5 and I came across a little tidbit that supposedly it is not possible to copyright a title, but it seems that the Wheel of Time has. So in many cases, I have to agree with that on multi-volume stuff. As far as disco music goes, it falls under that category of popular music that I generally run from and isolate and insulate myself from as much as possible, and have done so all my life. So I don't become familiar with it enough to form an aversion. I take a form of, I suppose, a musical preventive medicine in that regard. The Star Wars films, I'll always like the original from 77. And to a certain extent, the two that followed that. The most recent ones, they're curiosities as far as I'm concerned. Something that something that I would get and own just to complete a set, not particularly because of their artistic merit or cinematic merit. But thank you again. Thank you very much, stupid fool.
Have you got the pod?
Yes, but they're clearing up nicely, thanks. Yes. I have 2 ounces and handy 3-ton packets.
Give me them.
Wait. First, the money.
Here. 8 pence in 1-pound notes.
Thanks.
Zonks. With a trembling hand, I broke open the precious packet of Cenapod tea. Hello?
Pardon me. The Confessions of a Secret Cenapod Drinker, Part 2, in which the basement is raided by the police.
Thank you. I'm going to fly. The police are going to raid.
Sapristi, we must be in Part 2.
Right. Quiet, everybody. This is the police raid.
In came 100 police, cunningly dressed in the uniform of plain clothes men.
Nobody move. Manager S?
Yes?
100 beans on test.
Trapped. I immediately threw the centipod away. Then I ran. I didn't stop running till I was a mile away. Pogson, my music. Played in a different key. To hell with the expense. My trouble now was how to get a fresh supply of the deadly centipod leaves. I'd go mad without it. Wait! Of course! I did it on the National Health!
Let's hear next from who? We hear next from Dickie, the Stealth Geek. And the subject line is...
You mean I can only pick 3? Yo, Annam. Well, you've thrown down the gauntlet for us to pick the worst pieces of dreck ever greenlit by the entertainment industry. Well, gauntlet thrown, gauntlet accepted, and now I plan to bludgeon this topic with said gauntlet. Worst thing I've ever read. This is actually the toughest one to decide on. I generally don't pick up books unless they're recommended to me or have something to do with technology. One of my failings for sure, but I guess the worst book I ever bought and read was Podcasting for Dummies. Because I lost it about 3 days after I purchased it. So it's not really the worst book I've ever read, but the hardest one I've ever tried to hold on to.
What? you put that on your worst list because you lost it? Okay, that's fine. I picked one up. I got that too. I picked up Podcasting for Dummies, of course, the very beginning when I was starting this show. I'm not proud. I'm going to find out what I can from the quickest and easiest sources I can. And, well, that's a shame. I hope you find it. Hope you find it again. If you find it again, try reading it, and then tell me whether you liked it or not. I can't really say much for the plot, but... All right. I'm sorry to continue.
Worst thing I've ever heard. This is where it gets tough. The music industry rolls out a lot of homogenized LCD. Lowest common denominator. Music for the slovenly, unwashed masses for them to devour like swarms of locusts called down from a... Sorry, got carried away there, didn't I? I think I'll just list pop music as a non-viable category. On that note, I'll go with Metallica's latest effort, Saint Anger. It took nearly a year to record, and it sounds like they spent about as much time as Hollywood Swank took to put together their debut album. 2 days and $1,500, in case you're wondering. And in my humble opinion, Money, Sex, and Lies sounds a crap ton better than Saint Anger, but I'm cocky. Worst thing I've ever seen. I've got to be pretty specific here. I've seen some horrible movies, but the most noteworthy was one called... Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter. Look it up sometime. But I'm pretty sure, at least I certainly hope, that it was a school project. Worst movie I've ever seen is a little number that goes by the name of Blood Rain by pseudo-director Uwe Boll. Don't ask me how to pronounce that.
No need to ask. PC Gamer has spent quite a bit of time on them in their podcast, and so... they've come to what we can all suppose is the correct pronunciation.
This movie defies explanation. The acting is horrible, the effects are laughable, like watching plastic limbs get chopped off of people and red Kool-Aid squirting out of the wounds. As for the story, I'll let you know when I can find one.
What can you say about a director that becomes so offended by his detractors, by the reviewers that did nothing more than tell the world, hey, this guy makes crappy movies, that he puts on a pair of boxing gloves and challenges them to a couple of rounds in the ring? I think that pretty much tells you all you need to know about his skills as a director. But that's an entirely different story.
Anyway, that's all I've got for you, dude. Catch you on the flip side. Dickie the Stealth Geek out.
Thank you very much, Dickie the Stealth Geek. Folks, check out the Stealth Geek podcast at www.thestealthgeek.com. All right. We're getting into it now, and before continuing to the next feedback, which will be from James, we'll cut to a quick break. Back in a bit.
I made my way to Harley Street and burst into a doctor's surgery. Doctor, I need a...
How dare you burst in my surgery? Get a floor cloth and clean it up.
Help me! Help me! I'll make a clean breast of it. I'm an addict. I take 3 cups of Cenopod tea a day.
Cenopod, eh?
Yes, and I'm on the run.
I'm not surprised. Lay down on the operating table.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. I'll think of something. There you are. Swallow that.
What was it?
Cigarette ash. Can't drop it on the carpet, you know. Now, I must cut a square 12 by 12 out of your shirt.
Why?
So. I'm short of handkerchiefs.
Doctor, look. Get me the stuff. I must have it. Look, I've got money. £20 in £1 notes. I'll do anything.
Yes. First an examination, yes. Do you mind? Yes, these notes appear to be genuine.
Can they get me the stuff?
No, lady, you've got to give it up.
What? You can't get off my centipods like that.
Get up on the table again.
You're going to operate?
No, I want to sweep up. Must get away from my first aid class. We're learning to read thermometers tonight.
Look, but I need...
Shh, Neddy, you need rest, convalescence. Therefore, I'm sending you to the Seaview Rest Home, Greenacres.
Where's that?
Paddington. Max Gildray? Take him there.
Okay, I'm getting a headache now. I'm getting a headache because I got 2 very nasty little cats in here who just won't shut up. Absolutely, positively have to be fed right this frickin' second. So I put the bowls down, gave them their little food, so that maybe they'd shut up for 2 seconds so that I could continue with this podcast. My fault entirely. I'm trying to record this. It's now 5 a.m. Trying to record this, and it ain't going to happen unless I stop whining and get on with the emails. What was the next one going to be? It was going to be from James Stubbs, and so it shall be, and the subject line is...
Hear no evil. See no evil, read no evil.
And James writes,
Hi again, Annam. This will be a long one because I'm going to ramble.
Okay, fair enough.
As a self-professed media junkie, I've seen, listened to, and read a lot of crap in my years. Sadder is the fact that this stuff legitimately made it past professional editors, music executives, and studio heads. It's really bad when you've read and heard stuff online. I'm giving Videotech about another 3 to 4 years before consumer-grade equipment reaches the current capabilities of professional gear, that I certainly would have paid for if it hadn't already been put out there for free by those damned amateurs who exist solely to take money away from those poor bastards who now won't be able to buy a new Ferrari this year. I weep inwardly. So, let's start with the big one, movies. First of all, I'm going to discount the movies we all love, the ones that are just bad, seemingly on purpose, either through a total stoner script, an incompetent director, or both. This pretty much discounts anything seen on cable past 3 a.m. in the morning. So as much as I totally long to say that Night of the Comet or Eyes of the Werewolf is the top of the dung heap, It's not a fair comparison. So the winner in the cinematic craptacular category and receiver of the coveted golden toilet goes to Girl with a Pearl Earring. Yes, it was critically acclaimed. That was warning number one. And the art direction was lush and atmospheric. The only good thing about it, other than looking at Scarlett Johansson. And that's where things went off the rails. This movie is slow. Its 100-minute running time seems three times as much because nothing happens. The problem is that it's a psychological film with some minor social issues tossed in. The problem is that it's an art film that hasn't learned the cardinal sin of filmmaking. Show, don't say. But they overlooked the addendum to this. All atmosphere, with weak direction, and a meandering story, just puts me wondering if I can sneak into the next theater and see some violence, sex, fart jokes, anything to remind me that my brain hasn't totally ceased to function and that I'm capable of reacting to visceral things. And I would like to mention the runner-up, Gods and Generals, a Civil War epic of horrible Southern accents. Guys, if you're going to include the Confederacy, at least train your actors on how to mimic the speech correctly rather than a stand-up comedian's stereotypical redneck routine. And a little action that runs on for an eternity of 219 minutes. Wow, that sounds bad. Next up, music. Now, I'll be the first to tell you that I'm not the most qualified person to speak on music simply because I gave up on Top 40 radio a long time ago. However, being an opinionated bastard, that's not going to stop me. First of all, the music genres I like, such as psychobilly, techno, industrial, and metal, don't get played on the radio simply because the guys and ladies who are doing the interesting, original stuff isn't owned and hoard by Clear Channel. And this is exactly why they are trying so hard to crush webcasters. But enough of my ranting. The winner of the Golden Toilet in the oral aneurysm category is Paris by Paris Hilton. It is with great shame that I have heard it. It started out as a joke when I noticed that the library actually bought this festering piece of tardism. I'm still trying to find the guilty party. Now, you must understand that Ray, my girlfriend, and I despise the woman that couldn't even make a sex video look even marginally interesting, and anyone who has heard her speak is instantly reminded of the vapid head cheerleader back in high school with even less cranial development. So anyway, on a dare, she, and I by unfortunate proximity, listened to it. Baby Jesus wept. And the runner-up goes to The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins by Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, yes.
Not too much to say, but like Ms. Paris above, some celebrities should just leave well enough alone.
Yeah, that's a fact. I heard the song. I also saw the video. That's probably why I laughed so heartily. Thank you. That's a good one. James continues.
And finally, books. I can't claim to be an expert in books, but I am pretty widely read in the genres of mystery, science fiction, fantasy, and comics. Anything that makes the New York Times bestsellers list is usually a good warning sign to me to stay away from it. Now, I'm a D&D fan. I make no apologies. I like fluff fantasy, and I can at least assume some level of quality from the stories they publish. However, the novelization of the Baldur's Gate video game they did was absolutely horrible. The author, a first-timer who also happened to work at Wizards of the Coast at the time, totally disregarded the plot of the game and senselessly killed off characters, and did so frequently and unheroically. It was the first time I actually threw a book across the room intentionally trying to damage it. The book actually lessened the enjoyment I was having of playing the game. Runners-up go to anything written by Anne Rice outside of her Vampire Chronicles, ending with The Queen of the Damned, and Mayfair Witches series. The level of pretentiousness has just gotten overbearing in the last two books I tried, Vittorio the Vampire and Merrick. I haven't even been able to make it past the fifth chapter in each. Well, that's all I've got to say on the matter. I could probably come up with lots more, but those are the ones that spring immediately to mind, which is a pretty good indication of their odiousness in my mind. James Stubbs.
Thank you very much, James. Very thorough, very vivid. An email from James never disappoints. You definitely deliver. And I can see eye to eye with you on most of what you got there. Extremely thorough. Thank you very much. We're going to cut to a quick break, and when we return, we will hear from Mark Kinney of All Games Considered. Back in a bit.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! Mr. Seagoon?
Yes?
The Confessions of a Secret Centipod Drinker, Part 3.
Thank you.
Get up there, go, go, get up!
As I made my way to the rest home for incurable centipod drinkers, the craving came on me. I slipped into a phone box and started to brew a pot of senna. Hello?
Hello, is that you, Nugent?
You've got the
I rang up to ask if Alice has had her operation yet.
I don't know anybody called
yes,
Alice.
Yes, you do. She went away to have something done.
I knew a Muriel Blunt who went away.
Muriel Blunt? I've never heard of her.
Never heard of her?
No, there's no Muriel Blunt here. You must have the wrong number.
I'm sorry.
I should think so, getting me out of bed like that. Goodbye.
I'm always getting wrong numbers. Hello?
Hello, Arnold.
I'm not Arnold.
Oh, well, will you tell him Alice has had her operation?
Okay, moving right along. This next feedback comes from Mark Kinney of the All Games Considered podcast. Subject line is
Post-Gen Con Idiosyncratic Stuff.
And Mark writes,
Hey Adam 5, I've been remiss in sending an email for rather a while, so I figured I'd do it from a recognizable address.
By this, I take it he means that he would not have been sending it from a recognizable address if he had sent it from Gen Con, so he waited to get home. And thank you, I do appreciate that. You put me in mind of something now that is going to interrupt your letter, and I apologize for that, but now, while I'm thinking about it, I better say it, otherwise it's going to zip quickly out the other side of my head. Folks, when you write IDDFOS, when you write International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, it would be so cool if you can put somewhere in the subject line IDDFOS or feedback for the show or the podcast subject, something of that type. Most of the people that I've heard from already, I do quickly and easily recognize the email addresses and the names, of course, so they don't get deleted, they don't get overlooked. But it may very well be that I've deleted an email from someone that's written to this show because of a subject line that said something like, Hi, or Hey there, or Thought you might be interested in this. Because I certainly don't need to tell any of you that are online and go through your email that the spam abounds. And every once in a while I'll click on something and I think, well, maybe this might have something to do with the show and it's a new listener. And then, of course, it turns out to be stock tips, or worse, some offer to do something that is physiologically not possible for a price. So at any rate, yeah, in the subject lines, particularly if you're a new listener, and you'd like your letter, if you'd like your email read on the show, these are the steps to go through. First, write it. Second, email it to me. Yeah, it's that simple. Adam5@adam5.com, and there'll be no confusion about the spellings of that. If you just take a look at whatever it is that's playing your MP3 right now, you'll see the website address right there in the title and the MP3 tag information for the show. Sorry. Okay. Yes. Now I will continue with Mark Kinney's letter. Sorry for the interruption.
I've returned from Gen Con and all the great times with all the other podcasters there, and lo and behold, there was the cardboard cutout of Annam 5, just like you discussed on at least one of the Skype chats. I was incredibly amused that you went ahead and did this, and I'm sure you'll see pictures in the near future from Mick, maybe Clay, and lots of others. I actually don't recall if I got any, but if I did, I'll post them up somewhere and let you know.
Excellent. Yes, indeed, I certainly did, and as you've heard already, top of the show, just go to the IDDFOS homepage, and you'll be able to see at least some of them. As I get more, of course, I will update the collection if and when it grows. Mark continues.
But then came the last day of the convention, and we started to wonder what to do with them. I don't know about one of them, but the second one ended up coming back with us, where we decided, at my suggestion, to give you an honorary place at the Roll Monkeys table every time we meet. We shall perhaps try to manage a picture the next time we meet in a couple of weeks.
That is fantastic. Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly honored to be at that table. I'm certainly... I get a big kick out of that. I'm just wondering if that's going to get old pretty fast. I really... No, I mean, if it was a cardboard cutout picture of, like, Michelle Pfeiffer or Meg Ryan or something like that, then I would certainly wouldn't mind being displayed somewhere in the room during every game, but my face? Oh, wow. No, I tested that thing. I mean, I must have been looking directly into the lens when that picture was taken because the eyes follow you around the room. I mean, they look at you when you look at it, and that to me, that just creeps me out. I don't know how long you're going to want that to last. I'm certainly glad that you're going to do it, and I'm very happy and proud, and I would love to see a picture of that. But every game, you're a braver man than I. But I guess I'm negatively biased towards my own mug. Thank you, though. Thank you very much. Yes, Mick also, in a subsequent email, let me know that was going to be the case. And I think that's terrific. Good deal. Thank you. All right, let's see. Let's continue.
I suppose this segues into the idiosyncrasy subject, as for whatever reason, I have a hard time just throwing something away. I think that deep down, despite whatever other religious or spiritual overlay you put over me, that I am an animist, pun not intended. I didn't even think of that until now. I can't help thinking that in some way, things have a spirit that want to fulfill their function, especially those things with a creator's effort put into them. Mostly, this manifests itself in making me a pack rat, and I have a most difficult time throwing potentially useful things out. Fortunately, I don't suffer this to the point of those people who end up with entire rooms of their houses filled up with old newspapers and such, but at the weirder end, I do find myself feeling sorry for disused product mascots and such, though this did give rise to an idea for a Toon RPG scenario once. Yeah, it's a little weird. On the other hand, it helps prevent me wasting anything. And so we come to the cult of the amateur, and how it's supposed to be the end of the world. Sturgeon's Law came to mind right away, and most people echoed that without necessarily citing it.
Well, what do you think of that, stupid fool? We've got independent confirmation right here. I can't keep calling you stupid fool. You're right, I do feel antsy about it. I'm sorry, I guess it's going to have to be SF. And if people wonder about it, they'll just have to listen to old shows. But yes, here we go, Sturgeon's Law. And I'm assuming that you haven't been on the phone with Mark Kinney. I could be wrong, but whatever. How about I continue? Here we go.
I certainly know that all the authors we study in English classes weren't the only writers out there, much like there are hordes of lesser-known online authors for every J.C. Hutchins or Scott Sigler. I won't go into Wikipedia, as it has its own problems. I can understand why they don't want to limit themselves to just the experts who write all those other articles, but it helps to have their assistance as the basis to work from. After all, those who are considered experts have to maintain that status, and being wrong too much degrades one's credibility. Then again, scientists largely didn't believe in Alfred Wegener's theories of continental drift and plate tectonics either. until he was vindicated nearly 3 decades after his death. As to the failures of professionals, the most notable one I've seen is probably Fist of Fear, Touch of Death. It's allegedly a Bruce Lee film, cobbled together after his death from stock footage and coverage of a martial arts tournament, in which the successor to Bruce Lee's martial arts fame and renown watches a man weighing half again as much as Bruce Lee and possessing a mustache not unlike the one guy's from Mythbusters is described as having a close physical resemblance to Lee. Marvel as the narrator constantly confuses Japanese and Chinese cultures. Fall asleep to the triple-nested flashbacks. I wish I could think of more, but nothing much matches the horror that is that movie. Anyway, thanks for all the support and the nifty-sounding mashups from our game sessions and everything else. I hope things are well and continue to be so. Mark Kinney.
Thank you very much, Mark Kinney, host of All Games Considered. Find their link also in the Goodikatingatongatungs for this episode and, of course, their permanent link in the right-hand column on the IDD FOS homepage. We're going to take another break, and when we return, we will hear from Kurt the Camera Guy. Back in a bit.
Now to drink me Cinnapod tea.
Hello, hello. What are you doing in this phone box, matey?
Oh, hello, Constable. I was just making a portable Zulu rest camp.
Not allowed. What's your name, mate?
Let me see. Arnold Groynes.
Arnold Groynes? Arnold Groynes, yes. Here is your Alice Adder operation.
Yes, it was triplets.
Triplets? I bet that shook her. She thought it was water on the knee.
How very merry for her.
Now then, I've got to ask you a few questions. Are you a murderer?
Murderer? Let me have a look at my diary. Well, no, I'm not.
Ah. That's a pity, isn't it? You see, I'll get promotion if I catch his murderers. You can't get them, you know. Goodbye, mate.
Goodbye, Castle. Phew, that was a close shave.
And back we are for this final email, final letter for this particular episode, and it is from Kurt the Camera Guy of the Wandering Geek podcast. And the subject line is,
missed the mark.
No, actually you didn't, as you can well hear. You made it in just under the wire with this. So no more delays. Let's get right to it. Kurt writes,
hi, Adam. On the topic of professional endeavors gone wrong, ask any geek over 40 what the worst piece of television ever produced is, and you will probably hear the following 4 words. Star Wars Holiday Special. This piece of bonsafodu, for those who are too young to remember, is a 1978 stinker, starring the main cast of Star Wars, A New Hope, which would be fine, I suppose. Then they added such sci-fi luminaries as Harvey Korman in several roles, Art Carney, Diane Carroll, and Bay Arthur. As a kicker, they had Jefferson Starship, clever, as a musical act. The only redeeming value of this piece of dreck was the introduction of the character Boba Fett in an animated sequence. It would, of course, be way too easy for me to say the worst album ever made was the Star Wars Christmas album, the running theme of which was what you get a Wookiee for Christmas when he already has a comb. The final answer was a brush, by the way. But that would be a cheesy answer. Oh, heck with it. I just listened to a few seconds of it that I found on iMockery.
Oh, and there's a cool link here. I don't know. Maybe it isn't such a cool link. www.i-mockery.com. Shorts start. Well, I'll put this link in the Goodikatingatongatongs also.
And it really is the worst thing ever put on vinyl. So my judgment here stays. Wow. I need to come up with something that's not Star Wars related here for a closer. How about my submission for the worst movie ever put out on celluloid? Disney's Black Hole would get my first spot. This 1979 space opera tale of exploration of the area around a black hole is awful in every category available to it. It really did have some potential and failed miserably. A close second in my mind would be Superman 3, in which Richard Pryor co-stars with Christopher Reeves in what could possibly be the worst superhero film of all time. And that's saying something, since I actually sat through the entirety of Ghost Rider. Well, that's my list. I've got a ton of public policy stuff I could go through, but I thought I'd try to keep things light. Best of days, camera guy.
Well, those were some pretty, superb choices for stuff that has come from the media giants, the people that are supposedly the experts, the professionals, the ones that we are supposed to trust to provide us with the good stuff, not the awful, awful amateur stuff. I was 18 years old when the Star Wars Holiday Special came out, and I am extremely proud even to this day to say that I avoided it entirely and just didn't bother. I think I knew. No, I'm sure I knew that it was going to be an absolute piece of crap without having to actually tune in and watch it. I'm sure there are many, many people that did tune in just to see what kind of a train wreck it was really going to be. But just listening to that list of, as you put it, sci-fi luminaries, it's kind of it must have been a parody of itself. And no, I never did hear the album. Maybe I should check out that link. The Black Hole, Disney's Black Hole, is that where Maximilian Schell ended up inside the shell of Maximilian at the end? Yes, I guess I'm going to have to go along with you on that one too. They couldn't do a science fiction movie and treat it with any degree of seriousness or respect, because they're Disney, and they had to, well, at least in 1979. It was 2 years after Star Wars came out, and they just saw a big cash cow that they could milk. And yeah, they came out with two goofy little robots. One was all bashed up, I remember, and it had a Texas accent. Of course, both robots were floating versions of R2-D2, except they were given great big eyes to look at you with, so that they would be just so much more endearing. I recall the laser duel that one of them had with Maximilian, or at least whoever was supposed to be their Top Gun laser duel. Yeah, the movie comes to mind, and the more scenes I'm playing it in my head from it, the worse it gets. So, excellent choice there. I don't even have vague memories of Superman 3. I don't know whether I avoided it or saw it once extremely late at night. Don't know. Thank you. Thank you extremely much, Camera Guy, for that input. So yes, episode 44's topic, Dreck from on high, crap from the professionals, stupidity from those who are supposedly the experts and the best at what they do. Why on International Detective Dragons from Outer Space would this be covered? Getting back to and getting into the roots of this show, the roots of this podcast, which supposedly go into things, questions, unanswerable questions that affect the entirety of the human race, or at least as much of it as would be considered significant. Well, I'll talk about that. I'm going to talk about that after one more break, and when I'm done talking about that, we'll get into what the old-time radio offering for this episode is going to be. But we're gonna take one quick break right now, and then get into it. Back in a bit.
Mr. Seagoon?
Yes?
The Confessions of a Secret Centipod Drinker, Part 4, in which Nettie is given treatment.
Thank you. That evening, as well as screen state has just forecast, I started my rest cure.
Nettie,
This is where we give you complete silence.
Yeah, that's what my doctor prescribed.
No. Is it National Health Silence?
Yes.
Oh, dear. The National Health Silence is a bit noisy, you know. Why don't you have a private patient silence?
What does that sound like?
Yeah, sounds like this.
Jolly good.
Yes.
I'll have some of that. Well, what size silences have you got?
Well, we've got the luxury one that goes from here to there.
That's about the size I want.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. Minnie, wrap up a full-length silence, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in case you too are interested in purchasing a quantity of silence, here are a few samples. First, this. And this is for ladies. Or perhaps this is more in your line.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
Mayaga, a Hindu fakir, buried himself in sand with only his arms exposed to extend a begging bowl to people passing by 6 hours each day for 12 years. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you how Dunder Rock got its name. History tells of many great naval battles, but one of the most unusual sea battles that never took place happened in Dunder Rock on Lake Champlain near Burlington, Vermont. Dunder Rock so resembles the outline of a gunboat that a Dutch captain mistook it for an enemy vessel and fired a broadside at it. The stone got its name from the captain's exclamation when he discovered his mistake. Dunder was a blunder, believe it or not.
So, why? Why would IDDFOS be talking about something seemingly as trivial as what's the worst movie you've ever seen, what's the worst music, what's the worst book, etc.? Doesn't that seem like... doesn't that seem to be just a little bit trivial? Doesn't that seem to be just like so much more fluff? What really does it have to do with the rest of humanity, with unanswerable questions? I think I can see the point of view where this could be looked at as just an exercise in bashing people that have more money or more power than the rest of us. And in a way, yeah, it is. It does kind of... it does feel good to jab once in a while at the overinflated. But I think what it gets into more is what's being replaced now, what's being hijacked, if you want to put it a certain way, and how it affects a very, very large number of people on the planet. So what's being hijacked? Well, I really tried examining the question of amateur and professional so far as these three industries that we were talking about go. I wanted to examine it from a couple of steps back and really think about what it is that the pros, that the experts, are worried about or should be worried about. Before broadband and the internet, anybody could write a novel, anybody could make a film, anybody could record a musical CD. Anyone, with the capabilities, obviously, with the time, energy, and whatever necessary funding they needed to do it. What did they not have that the musical industry, the music industry had, the film industry had, and the publishing industry had? What they did not have that they have now is the method of distribution. Before the internet and broadband, which is spreading wildly and rapidly across the world, before that, the masses, if you want to put it that way, the grand population of amateurs, both talented and untalented, there was no way for any of those individuals to effectively have their work known. Now, someone that records music can effectively make it available to anyone else in the world with a computer and an internet connection. Same goes for books. Same goes for films. That's going to get better, actually. I mean, right now you've got YouTube, which for length of project and quality of what you're looking at leaves, of course, quite a bit to be desired. But that, too, is going to change. It's going to get better. And the distribution will be very simple and very worldwide. With that many voices, with that many amateurs now having the ability to distribute their work, that now takes the final piece of power, the final playing card that these so-called professionals and experts have. Now, you've got something like, let's say, SF put it this way, that if the plots for the prequels, the Star Wars prequels, had been on their own, just pitched in Hollywood, they would have been laughed out of the room. Well, that's arguable. Yeah, probably, maybe. Particularly since they would cost so much. If they were unknowns and there were no such thing as Star Wars or George Lucas, yeah, they probably would have been laughed out of the room. But then again, you got to think about other films that have come from the Hollywood machine. And I'm just going to go with movies for this. I'm not going to go into all the other things. It took $73 million. It took approximately million dollars to make Battlefield Earth with John Travolta, that movie version of the L. Ron Hubbard sci-fi novel, which was almost universally panned. And I saw, I think, a good portion of it. I could not sit through the entirety of it. It was just too awful. And yeah, it was a piece of crap. It was really, really awful. It did not live up to what it could have been. And I think it was approximately $175 million to make Waterworld. I'm not going to comment on its quality or merit because I did not see it. I actually, to this day, have not yet seen Waterworld. But $175 million? Now, these are stories that professionals accepted scripts for. And if you want to get into what really happens to the artistic process in Hollywood, I would recommend listening to episode 43, IDDFOS 43, in which we heard from Raphael a very in-depth email going into just how badly the artistic process can be mangled by people that don't know what they're doing. And that may have something to do with the fact that it cost $175 million. But suppose an amateur comes along. Amateurs that want to produce their own pieces of work. Something of meaning, something of quality that they can distribute to the whole planet. Suppose some amateur comes along and says they have an idea for a film, say, about a little kid, one of those rags-to-riches underdog stories. An underdog story about a little kid whose special talent is that he constantly farts, that he is just unbelievably good at breaking wind and has unending flatulence. Little boy, just an amazing ability that just constantly fart, and the various adventures that it leads him into, say, ending up in the space program. If his real ambition is to become an astronaut, somehow his ability to fart constantly allows him to get into the astronaut program, to become a part of that. Now, if an amateur wanted to put out something like that, then certainly I know Hollywood would probably accept it and make it into a movie called Thunderpants and put it out in the year 2002 and spend $7 million to produce it. Look it up on imdb.com. I am not kidding. Oh, I think I put the final nail in the coffin here, but what I'm really trying to say, as far as the experts and the professionals go, sure, there's been incredibly good stuff that's come out of Hollywood, really entertaining, high quality, even on television. Even on television, every once in a blue moon, something slips by the idiots and actually is not only entertaining, but good for us, enlightening. What a wasted media television is. What a wasted, wasted medium. Something that could be used to examine all kinds of questions in an entertaining, not in a boring way, but an entertaining way. Something that could get people to think beyond the Paris Hilton stage of who's dieting, how much weight are they losing, all the rest of that crap, and what are they doing. I almost bought a TV guide just to read off what was available, but I didn't want to spend the money. I didn't want to put even another dime in that direction, not even for research for this show. All right then. I think we're going to get into next the old-time radio offering for episode 44, and it is going to be from the Lux Radio Theater. Lux presents Hollywood. This one from 1940. It is longer than any other OTR show that I've made available, in that it's 50 minutes. It's the play, it's a radio version of the play Our Town by Thornton Wilder, a Pulitzer Prize winning piece of work. It starts out extremely corny, but if you actually give it the chance that it needs, if you actually listen to it to the end, you realize that even with the sentimentality and illusory picture of the U.S. of A. that it presents, for the most part, I think you'll find that it's got some very definite listening worth. There's a strong message there underneath all the cornball, and it's very effectively played. Here's a short snippet from Our Town, as produced by the Lux Radio Theater in 1940, and I hope you give it a try.
Henry, I'm glad you spoke to me like you did, but you'll see. I'm going to change so quick. You bet I'm going to change. And Emily, I want to ask you a favor.
What?
Emily, if I go away to State Agricultural College next year, will you write me a letter once in a while?
Oh, I certainly will. I certainly will, George. Certainly seems like being away 3 years, you get out of touch with things. Maybe letters from Grover's Corners won't seem so interesting after a while. Grover's Corners isn't a very important place when you think of all New Hampshire, but I think it's a very nice town.
Mm-hmm. You know, Emily, whenever I meet a farmer, I ask him if he thinks it's important to go to agricultural school to be a good farmer.
Well, George.
Yeah, and some of them say it's even a waste of time, and you can get all that stuff anyway in the pamphlets the government sends out. Emily, I'm going to make up my mind right now. I won't go. I'll tell Pa about it tonight.
But, George, I don't see why you have to decide right now. It's a whole year away.
Emily, I'm glad you spoke to me about that fault in my character.
Oh.
What you said was right, but there was one thing wrong in it. That's where you said I wasn't noticing people. You, for instance. You say you were watching me when I did everything. I was doing the same thing about you all the time.
Why, George?
Well, sure. I always thought about you as like one of the chief people I thought about.
Oh, George. Life's awful funny. How could I have known that? I thought...
Listen, Emily. I'm going to tell you why I'm not going to agricultural school. I think that once you've found a person that you're very fond of, I mean, a person who's fond of you, too, and, well, who likes you well enough to be interested in your character, I think that's just as important as college is. Even more so. That's what I think.
I think it's awfully important, too.
That episode, of course, will be available in its entirety as a hot link on the IDD FOS homepage. Right-click, save as, download it, give it a try if you'd care to. I think you might like it. I suppose we're going to jump right now because I've got nothing more to say really about this. Oh, what about episode 45? Annam, the topic for episode 45. You completely left that out. What's up? This has been a tough one, but I'm going to let my current listening habits influence me. There have been a couple of days, well, actually almost a week, during which I have had no podcasts to listen to because I've downloaded all of them. I didn't much feel like getting into and re-listening to my old-time radio stuff, so I've been listening to audio recordings of the complete works of Shakespeare. There is an audio collection put out by, I believe it's the Archangel Company, that includes absolutely every play attributed to William Shakespeare, top to bottom, the whole folio. And as I've been listening to it, I've been picking out little phrases here and there, or groups of phrases, that drive home, to me at least, they drive home the power of language and the reason why, more than 400 years later, people are still performing these shows. And that's the key there, of course. Reading Shakespeare is just, oh, it's just no good. To me, it's no good. It's not meant to be read. It's meant to be watched. Shakespeare is to be observed in performance. It's not to be read. And the next best thing, of course, is to listen to it being performed well. Fortunately, the Archangel Company got very good people in on the project. And I think episode 45 is going to be... The question for episode 45 is going to be, do you consider the collective works of Shakespeare to be worthy of centuries of play and revival, or do you personally wonder why these plays are still performed and still held in such high regard? If you're in the camp of, yes, they are extremely worthy to be preserved, played, and from generation to generation cherished because of the power of the language and because of the author's almost encyclopedic knowledge of human nature, or if you're of the camp that they are overhyped, they are simply performed out of habit, that the language has strayed so far from what is now understandable by the average citizen, even the average intelligent reader, that it becomes a chore to appreciate. Either way, please write in and give your opinion. If there are specific quotes that you have found to be extremely truthful, if there are phrases that you consider to be extremely useful that you in fact have borrowed from, either in your own writings or, hell, even in role-playing games, certainly in fantasy role-playing games, and well, at Renfests for the past 3 decades, even though the Elizabethan era was far, far later than medieval times, people still borrow the language from Shakespeare in order to play characters, which many consider to be a big no-no, but what are you going to do? Write in, please. Let me know. Let anyone else know. If you think it's a really lame topic, then I guess I'm not going to hear much from anybody, and I'm going to have to go and dig out phrases myself and come up with something to make it sound exciting. So the topic for episode 45 is going to be of the power of language as it applies to Shakespeare. Are we beyond it, or should it be preserved for many generations to come? And with that said, I think it's time to present the closing music for this episode, which will be Rhonda Lawrence. The artist's name is Rhonda Lawrence, and this piece of music is the title track from the album Winter Moon. This is available for download at magnatunes.com.
Magnatunes, we are not evil.
Now, you're not going to hear this. You're not going to hear this kind of music played on the radio, at least not, certainly not on any of the top stations or most heavily funded stations in the big cities, because it's a piece of, first of all, it's a piece of very beautiful music, and second of all, it's 5 minutes and 30 seconds long. Now, you can't have that. You can't have a piece of music with no singing in it that's 5 minutes and 30 seconds long. That's just too long. People don't have the patience for things like that. The professionals know it. Or whether that's true or not, the sad thing is they're making hand over fist playing the same 5 songs every hour, day after day after day, which is really kind of sad. That's another topic. How about I just stop being so negative? Don't be so negative, Annam. Just play the closing music. On the opposite side of the closing music, I'll be saying my goodbyes. But in the meantime, please give this a listen. I think you'll like it. And that was the title track from the album Winter Moon by Rhonda Lawrence, once again available at Magnatunes. Well, I apologize for the lateness of this episode. But we have reached the end of it. We have reached the end of episode 44. Once again, I would like to thank any new listeners and welcome, particularly if you've found this show through the efforts of Kurt the Camera Guy and Mick Bradley, simply by virtue of the fact that they brought that silly cutout to Gen Con. Welcome indeed. Please write in if that's the case. By all means, please write in if that's the case. Anim5 at anim5.com. And of course, I'd like to once again thank Kurt and Mick. Heroic, magnificent, and epic service you have done for me. And I owe you guys. I'd also like to thank Stupid Fool. Sorry, gotta call you SF. I'd like to thank SF. And Dickie the Stealth Geek, and James, and Mark Kinney, and once again, Kurt, for writing in. Congratulations once again to the Norwegian Viking, Mr. T, on getting engaged. Excellent. And I'd like to thank you very much for listening. I hope you'll join us for episode 45. I will, of course, in that episode be explaining why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.